The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, 95.1 FM, Freeview 277 on 9abizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the snogginy gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello. We have a networking mount at Chartwell, which is Winston Churchill's house, isn't it?
It was, yeah.
Well, you said he's coming back, you said.
He didn't live there anymore.
Yeah, but you said he's going to come back.
Yeah, but they're going to give him a flat in number 11, aren't they?
A flat. Enjoy a lovely walk and talk. The walk will take you around an hour with lunch provided by Thackeray Williams, the solicitors. You can meet outside the cafe at Chartwell. It's National Trust now, of course. So this is in Mapleton Road, Westerham. T for Tiger, N for Norman, 16, 1, P for Peter and S for Sugar. It's on the 24th of November at 10:30. And you can find all the details, as always, on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Phonetic spelling by Jules there.
Yep.
P for pterodactyl.
Yeah. M for and all mince that. Pie.
Yeah, yeah. Sarah Marsh Collins has gone, oh, my God. The guy has turned up to clean our windows, ha ha ha, and there's a gif of a storm because it's lashing with rain there. Well, I guess.
And your shoes were all soggy, weren't they? I saw you.
My shoes were soggy.
Wiping your blue suede shoes. Oh, uh-huh.
They're black.
Uh huh.
Suede shoes.
Yeah, I know, but there wasn't a song about black suede shoes.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a song about
that. No, I got that. I got it three times. You've done it. No need to do the joke three times.
So I saw you, listener. I saw him wiping his black suede shoes on the back of his black trousers.
Yeah, because they're wet.
Yeah, what kind of school of cleaning your shoes did you go to?
They're suede. How are you supposed to clean them?
Well, they,
I wasn't cleaning them. I was drying them.
Little brush.
Yeah.
A little suede brush.
Oh. No, got no suede brush
on me.
You
got one in your handbag?
No, I haven't.
Also, of course, there is a suede protector you can buy, which you could spray on. Have you got one of those?
Not on me, no.
Put it on your Christmas list.
Okay.
I would.
I actually have got some suede spray protector at home.
You?
But yeah.
Very organised.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you tell Tony about your rats that you have in your...
About my what?
Your rats.
Rats?
Yeah, because I bet he has a rat protection.
I haven't got rats. It was you. got rats. It was her. She did my washing up with my rat cloth.
I threw a party for his 60th, I think it was. And I got a table out of his garage. It was a shed, really, Tony. And I got this one of those put-up tables for the garden. And it had rat droppings on it. So I got a cloth. And I obviously cleaned it thoroughly before putting food on it. And then, because I had imbibed quite a lot of Cava and Prosecco.
She was drunk.
I was running the ship, you know, it was stressful.
She put the cloth that she cleaned up the rat droppings with in my cupboard under my sink.
Under the sink. And then at 4 in the morning, I woke up and I remembered.
Sobered up. She sobered up and remembered.
And I texted him and said, please don't use that rat cloth I've put under your sink. Because I thought he's going to do his surfaces in the kitchen with it. You know. But he does have a rat problem.
In a garage.
Yeah, and a squirrel problem.
Well, we do have a rat man, Paul, if you'd like to contact us.
Well, I knew he would, see.
Well,
what about squirrels?
We have dealt with squirrels in the past.
I live in a very rural place with a big garden. I have my own wood and my own lake, and we have all kinds of wild animals. We have badgers, we have rats, we have mice, we have dormice, we have squirrels, Mexican squirrels, we have squirrels.
You'd have to listen to show 57 to know about the Mexican squirrels.
Yeah, and you know, a whole selection of foxes, all kinds of things. Yeah.
Oh, my mum's got a fox that comes in over yonder, and it comes in, and she was sitting in her garden the other day, and it got its head caught in the trellis trying to come through. She said she heard this scrabbling. Of course, what you don't want is one of those newts. What are they? The great crested newts.
I've got some of them as well. I've got great crested newts.
Then how long does it take to
build? Well, of course, now you're also now very much aware of bats. This is another person we have to coordinate with on our project.
Bats in your belfry.
Absolutely.
My new build, yeah. Now the winter time's here and it's dark at like 4:30 in the afternoon. Went out the other day, couldn't see a blooming thing in a car park, and I said to Andy, we need to put lights up. He went, you can't. Why? Oh, no, yeah. The council said we can't put lights up because it annoys the bats.
Well, that's correct.
Yeah, I don't give a toss what the bats care. You know, I don't care. Yeah. So we've had to investigate and buy bat friendly solar lamps.
Yes. Well, there's a whole thing about
light pollution,
blue light, pollution. Isn't there? Yeah. Because where they've changed the street lamps and that, apparently it does upset us and circadian rhythms and also the animals, you know, the birds and that. It's true.
Yeah.
You got bats in your belfry. We've got bats, actually, you know.
The funniest one, not the house I live in now, the house I had before, we had the loft was full of bats. And I called the bat protection league to get them out because they're a health hazard, but you can't do it.
Are they a health hazard?
Yeah. And the geezer came from the bat protection league and he was sat in the kitchen, okay, waffling on about bats. I'm going, yeah, mate, just take them away and get rid of them. He sat there waffling. I had two kittens and both of the kittens came through the cat flap one after the other and both of them had a bat in their mouths. And he went, man, you've let your cat kill the bats. I haven't done anything, yeah? Kittens, they kill bats and birds. That's what they do.
Our greyhound, one of her most...
Did he get a bat?
She's caught two rats in our garden.
Okay.
Shake them to death. So greyhounds are quite useful.
Did she clean them with a cloth and put it under your sink?
No, she didn't.
She wasn't drunk then.
No, she wasn't. She's teetotal, my dog.
Is she?
Yeah, okay. Definitely teetotal. Maidstone Christmas donation. Quickly changing the subject before it gets too heated. The Maidstone Christmas Donation Hub has opened its doors today. This is new. I don't know about this. So the Maidstone Borough Council is working in partnership with the Mall. Is it a mall or a mall?
It's a mall.
Hosting a Christmas Donation Hub, which was officially opened by the Mayor of Maidstone. Had all his regalia on and all that tinkling around. And the hub is collecting festive gifts, decorations, toys, toiletries, household products, food items, and more for those who may not otherwise be able to enjoy the festivities. Now, the donation hub is located on the upper level of the Mall, next to the children. If I was northern, I'd say Mall, wouldn't I?
Yeah, but you're not northern, you're from Essex.
Yeah,
aren't you? You're from Essex, aren't you?
Mall, from Mall.
So it's a Mall, isn't it?
Next to.
Because you're from Essex, aren't you?
You sound more like a Siamese cat, meow. Yeah. Next to the children's soft play area, and will be open to receive donations of new children's toys, festive gifts, household items, Christmas decorations and non-perishable food. And the Maidstone Christmas Donation Hub is supporting local charities who will distribute the donated items to those people who need them most and include the Blackthorn Trust, the Fusion Healthy Living Centre, Harmony. I want to know what half of these people do. It's very interesting. Making a Difference to Maidstone, Maidstone Community Support Centre, the Salvation Army, St Martin's Church, Shepway, the Princess Project, the Vine Church, no relation to Jeremy Vine, Trinity Community Centre and Wishing Hearts. It's staffed by volunteers, this hub, and it's open from Monday the 13th of September, so over yonder, last Monday, to Saturday the 16th of December. And you can go to maidstone.gov.uk/Christmas-hub to find out more, or else, of course, kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Tracy Ferguson showed us pictures of an 80s girl.
Oh.
I think that would be you.
Oh, it must be. Oh, yeah. No, I think it's because they guessed the cheesy tunage.
They what?
They guessed the cheesy tunage.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, because I'm much more late 70s, very early 80s. I'm so old.
1880s.
Yeah, thank you for that.
That's right.
I found a picture of myself the other day with Crook, my best friend, when I was at junior school. And we were about 12. Our eyebrows were absolutely plucked to nothing.
Right.
The fashion is bizarre, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We had like pencil thin eyebrows. Mm-hmm. Luckily, they've grown back. Not quite as bushy as yours, but we're getting there. Castor oil, I think, helps.
Helps what?
I can see where this is going.
Castor oil.
It's not an enema, you know.
Yeah.
No, apparently if you dab your eyebrows, I think it's castor oil. Maybe I've got it wrong.
I dab my eyebrows in castor oil. Yeah. Why would I want to dab my eyebrows in castor oil?
To make them grow if you've overplucked them in the 80s. which was the
I never overplucked my eyebrows in the 80s, I have to say.
No, I don't suppose you ever have. Yeah. Although as you get older, you do get those rogue ones, don't you? I mean, I'm not talking about you personally, but one, men in general, they get tufty bits out their ears and, like, you know.
I get that. Yeah. I'm nearly 70.
And you don't pluck them.
Yeah.
You just leave them. Was it Dennis Healy that had those bushy eyebrows?
Yeah,
they get bushier as they get older.
You look at old blokes and you go, why don't you just trim your eyebrows? But then when you get there, you trim your eyebrows and the next day it's back. And you go, how did that happen? It's the only part of that.
So they really grow.
Yeah, it doesn't grow anywhere else apart from...
And yet women lose their eyebrows. It's very strange, isn't it? Whole thing. But you can go to a Turkish barber because they do all that. They do that little hot... Have you ever been to a Turkish barber?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they do that hot thing in your ear, don't they, to burn the hairs out. Big thing in London, you know, all my kids go, or the blokes, the boys, go to the Turkish barber. Now ears sizzled.
Mine just sticks the razor in there.
Ooh, that sounds very nice. Really?
Yeah.
Well, you probably don't go to a proper Turkish barber, because you're in Tenterden. They don't get that far,
of course he's Turkish.
Is he?
Yeah, he's so Turkish, you can get a kebab in the barber shop.
Is it cash only?
Uh-huh.
Is it cash only?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, boss. A short back and sides and a kebab? Go for it.
Cleft to co.
Yeah. Right. Well, I've got one more thing to read and then we're going to talk to Mark because we need some professional, sensible decorum on this show.
What a quandary we're all in with tax.
Well, it's not just tax, is it?
No,
anyway,
I know, but he's
West Kent Mining.
Yeah, he knows all about it.
He knows all about lots of things.
Yeah.
West Kent Mine, Big Give Christmas Challenge. Our Big Give Christmas Challenge runs from the 28th of November to the 5th of December. For this week only, your donations will be doubled. So every pound you give has twice the impact. This means if you give £25, we get £50. It's a win-win situation. This year, we need to help to raise £4,500 so that we can deliver vital mental health support to those experiencing the heartbreaking impact of domestic abuse. The challenge goes live at 12 p.m. on Tuesday, the 28th of November, and you can visit our website to find out more on how you can donate and get your donations doubled. If you want to find out more about that West Kent Mind Big Give Christmas Challenge, go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. And the details and the link can be found there. Right. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the show Mr. Mark Telford of Telford's Accountants. Mark, good afternoon. Welcome back on the show. It's lovely to see you again. We got lots of lovely questions to ask you. She's getting all previous about tax for some reason. She's trying to avoid her tax. I know she is. Yeah. She's looking at tax avoidance schemes or something.
I'm thinking of opening a barber's.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here again.
Yeah, lovely to see you. For those that don't know, just give us a bit of an overview about Telford's Accountants, what you do, how you do it, and where you do it.
Yeah, Telford's Accountants in its current form has been going since 2012.
Right.
We work with small and medium businesses throughout Kent, the South East, and slightly further afield as well, now with the benefit of cloud technology. And it's very much focused on helping business owners, you know, achieve their plans and their goals.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't work with big corporates. It's essentially I run a small business, and I really want to look to help people in a similar position.
It's interesting. I have mentioned this before, but I think it's worth mentioning again as well. A few years ago, I happened to mention on the show that I was going to visit my accountant, which would be you, at the end of the week. And loads of people went, oh, you poor thing. Sorry, why? And they went, oh, having to visit your accountant. I said, it's not like a trip to the headmaster or something, you know. Oh, yeah, well, you know, you get told off. No. That's not how accountants work at all. Mm. I have a fantastic relationship with my accountants, and I find their knowledge and expertise incredibly useful. Mm. And I use that knowledge and expertise, and I'm about to on this radio show for a bit of free blagging in a minute. Yeah. But, you know, there are technical things that accountants do, and maybe we'll cover that in a moment, Mark. But there's the whole consulting, support, information thing that they do too, which I find incredibly valuable because, you know, I do spend an awful lot of my time arguing about tax on Twitter at the moment for some bizarre reason. Well, I know why I do it. It's because so many people have absolutely no idea at all, including some of our leading politicians that don't seem to understand the tax schemes that they've implemented themselves. But that's another matter. Why don't we just focus for a moment on the basics of what a good accounting service offers, in terms of, you know, audit or bookkeeping service and the kind of things you do. And confirmation statements was another new one they popped in a few years ago.
Yeah, it's confirmation statement. It's the new annual return.
Yeah.
But I think at a very simple level, what most people understand accountants to do is, oh, they do your accounts and tax returns, don't they? And that's what a lot of people would associate that once a year visit to the accountant and draw comparisons with the headmaster. They're going to get told off. They're going to get told how much tax they need to pay.
Normally, because they left it until, what, the 31st of December or whatever it is.
That's it. But you know, we very much see the sort of service we should be providing to business owners is throughout the year. Mm. So we don't want to be in touch once a year. We want to be in regular contact, because there will be something that will happen part of the way through the year that if you don't happen to be speaking to your accountant around about the same time, it could get left, it could get missed. Or, you know, the worst position would be you'd make a decision and it'd be the wrong decision, and you wouldn't be able to unwind the tax implications of that.
Yeah.
So yes, there's the accounts and tax, but it's more business support and advice.
Yeah.
And it'll, what we tend to look at is, we've got a very good idea of most of the things that a small business will face.
Mm.
And if we don't, we will know somebody that will be able to help with that, or had gone through that.
Absolutely. I want to talk about all those things, but just so we're clear, because a lot of people get confused about this, you know, about why they have an accountant or whatever. In terms of doing a tax return and what people call a tax audit, yeah, what are the legal requirements for small businesses?
So a small business, if you look at an individual, let's say they'll be a sole trader.
Yeah.
They haven't got a limited company. They just need to submit a personal tax return once a year. If they exceed the VAT threshold, they'll need to submit VAT returns, normally quarterly.
Hmm.
Different schemes apply. If you've then got a limited company, on top of having to do your own personal tax return, you'll have to do a company set of accounts and a company tax return. What people call audit, and they quite often confuse audit with annual accounts, audits only apply to much larger businesses. So as an example, we don't do audits at all. We don't deal with companies that big.
But limited companies have to do a tax return.
That's right,
a confirmation statement. Just explain what a confirmation statement is.
A confirmation statement is a bit like being on the electoral roll. So that letter, that notification that you'll get through asking about the inhabitants of the house.
Mm.
Confirmation statement is exactly the same thing for directors and shareholders of a company.
Mm.
They just want to make sure that the information they've got is up to date and accurate.
Yeah.
Nothing to be worried about.
Sure. Because I'm like that, I'm a bit of a nuisance with things like this. The first time I got one, it said, people that have a significant control over your business. So I went, Jeremy Hunt, Rishi Sunak, and I went, no. I went, yeah, they have much more control over my business than I do. But that wasn't really what they were asking, was it?
No, not really. They've got what's called a PSC, or a person with significant control. Well, what is that? Well, it's probably a director or a shareholder, but essentially every company has one, because ultimately somebody is in control of that business. Who is it?
Absolutely. Okay, so that's the basics. But as you say, Mark, as an organisation, Telfer's accountants operate on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis throughout the year, supporting their clients. And I know that you're great users of technology as well. So let's just focus on that, because that has its fun elements attached to it. there are quite a few software products around now. Which, to be fair, it does make life a lot easier once you use a software product to do stuff. I mean, for instance, I've just launched two coffee shops with a third coffee shop coming along. VAT on products sold in a coffee shop, I mean, what can you say? It's a laugh. You know, is it hot or is it cold? Is it eat-in or is it takeaway? Is it a biscuit or is it a cake? And all of those have different VAT treatment. The beauty now, we use a thing called Square Up, which is a till-based system, yep. And it does that for you. It decides whether one thing has VAT or not. Whether it does it accurately or not, I've no idea, because I wouldn't know. But there is technology there to help you with some of these more arcane things. But you use accounting software, primarily Xero.
That's right, Xero with an X. Mm. If you watch television real time and don't fast forward through the adverts, you may well have seen a Xero advert,
right,
with a guy running across a desert. What's that's got to do with the
accounting? Yeah, exactly.
but yeah, that's a great example, Paulie. You know, if you've got a coffee shop where you're selling hot and cold food and drink to eat in or take away, it's got different VAT treatment. Mm. You've got a till software which allows you to categorize everything,
yeah,
which allows you to capture the data really easily. Mm. We go back a few years, we used to have a catering client who sold hot and cold food and drink for consumption on the premises or for takeaway. We had to do such incredibly complicated analysis to work out what the VAT bill would be.
Yeah.
So that's one example where software is a big move forward.
Absolutely. And not only that, not only working out what the government are going to steal from you eventually, it's basically knowing how to position your business. Yeah. If I'm flogging Jaffa cakes, you know, for 10p each, and I suddenly discover that I'm only getting 4p, yeah, and the rest is going in tax and overheads and what have you, it becomes non-viable. So to analyse that spend, as you quite rightly say, used to be incredibly difficult. Using technology now, it's not quite so bad.
That's exactly right. And you know, VAT is a great example, because the VAT annual threshold at the moment, for anybody who's trading and their sales are covered by standard rate VAT, once you hit annual turnover of £85,000, you have to register for VAT.
Yeah.
And we spoke about this before the show went live. There's a lot of people who are approaching that threshold and think, oh, I don't want to go over that because I don't want to have to register for VAT.
Yeah. It's a really good point. There is a cliff face at that threshold, that VAT threshold, where there are literally hundreds of thousands of small businesses that refuse to grow past 80,000 a year, to the point where they'll stop work halfway through the year. That's and not right. Work again, because they don't want to do VAT. Now, I was having a debate on social media with some people about that, and they went, yeah, but it's not difficult anymore, you just get software to do it. And I went, yes, that's absolutely true, but a lot of them, it isn't the doing of the VAT that's the problem, it's their pricing structure. Yeah, if you're a small business and you don't charge VAT, you have a 20% price advantage.
That's right.
The minute that you charge VAT, your prices are all going to go up by 20%, or you're going to lose 20% of your income. And that's what a lot of people are trying to avoid with that, you know, cliff face on VAT. It's not just the act of actually doing VAT returns. There is that as well, obviously. But
yeah, I mean, that's dead right, Paul. You know, now, if that's one business trading with another business and they're both VAT registered, it doesn't matter. Mm. But let's use the example of plumber, somebody who comes around to service a boiler. If he's just a small business trading on his own, and he's not VAT registered, but there's another plumber who is VAT registered, for the end consumer, that's me or you, who aren't registered for VAT, we're paying 20% more just to work with a guy who's VAT registered.
Yeah.
So that's a huge disadvantage for that small business owner. And again, we touched on it. Mm. The VAT threshold is far too low in this country.
Yeah.
It's inhibiting small business.
Yeah. Interestingly, I don't have a particular view one way or the other on this, but in France, there is no threshold. Everybody has to be VAT registered.
It's very hard to run a small business in France, or to be self-employed, apparently.
Well,
in France,
you can only be self-employed in France, and you can only earn up to €35,000 a year. after you earn more than 35,000 euros a year, you have to become a limited company. And once you become a limited company, you have to charge VAT, no matter how much you turn over 35,000. But in other countries that have VAT, the VAT threshold is much higher. Mm. And I read somewhere a tax lawyer saying that if it had kept pace with how it should have kept pace, the threshold should be somewhere around £200,000 now.
Tony, running a business as you do, feel free to chip in on this as well, because I could see you champing at the bit there.
Yeah, there was a couple of items there, really. What, of course, has to happen, even with the small traders who are not VAT registered, they are still paying VAT buy their goods.
Yeah.
So the discrepancy between what the end user pays between a VAT registered and non-VAT registered contractor would be slightly less than 20%.
Sure.
Although they believe it to be 20%.
Sure. Yeah.
But certainly, you know, that threshold does inhibit growth. Mm. But it's interesting, isn't it? If you didn't have any threshold at all and everybody had to register for VAT, is that a better move?
Mm.
Than raising the threshold.
As a general principle, and not liking paying tax very much, I kind of shy away from that. But there's also a part of me that says, but really, why should you have an advantage for no particular reason?
Yeah. Yes.
If you're going to charge VAT, charge VAT. And exactly as you said, Tony, that you're paying VAT out anyway. So this is where an accountant such as Mark comes into his own, though, isn't it? Because if I was starting a small business now, the first kind of questions I would be asking someone like Mark is, I'm not hitting the threshold at the moment, but is it still worth me registering for VAT depending on my business?
And what would Mark say?
It depends.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But interesting point that, you know, that Tony's referenced there, and just touching on some more of what you said there, Paul. You know, if VAT registration was compulsory regardless of the size of the business, yes, we'd all get used to it. There'd be more tax take for the government, and that potentially means that we'd be taxed less in other areas. But again, what we've got to remember is VAT is an indirect tax. Mm. You know, it's just there. Mm. It's a bit like it's not correct terminology maybe, but it's a bit like a stealth tax. You're paying it, but you might not realise you're paying it.
Yeah, yeah.
Depending on what you're buying and when.
Yeah.
But it's a good point, Paul, about, you know, those businesses who stop growing because they don't want to go over the threshold. Use an example of a sector like Tony's.
Hmm.
The price of raw materials in the construction industry has gone through the roof over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So you've got that small trader who's not VAT registered, he is paying VAT on the materials he buys.
Mm.
His margin is being squeezed more and more because he's insisting on capping his turnover at £85,000.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, he injures himself effectively.
Yeah.
I mean, we also have the anomaly in our industry where if you're building a new house, it's zero rate VAT.
Mm.
So all of the work that you do on a new house, it's zero rated at VAT. If you're refurbishing your property, so now we want to refurbish a property and bring it up to modern day standards and put in heat pumps and what have you, you're going to get penalised with a VAT charge.
Mm.
That to me is crazy.
It's bonkers, isn't it?
It's absolutely bonkers.
There's no incentive whatsoever
to refurbish, which is why more and more older houses get knocked down. Create the plot, rebuild it, save yourself the VAT.
Where I live in Whitstable, going off piste a bit, cladding, you know, they're all like these main houses now. I mean, there were some beautiful houses on the seafront, and now, like, they're all putting the same cladding. And talking about light pollution, all these fancy lights all around, and horrible.
The problem that I have with all it, the UK tax code is 12,000 pages long currently, yeah. The Hong Kong tax code is 12 pages. there's a bit of disparity in there, but like so many things organised by politicians along the lines we were talking earlier about technicians, technical people and stuff like that, is they implement, they see a problem, they implement a solution, but they don't realise the impact on everything else. And therefore it gets more and more out of control. So they then try and implement something else that brings it back into control, which just makes it more and more complicated and generates loads of little loopholes that people then exploit to avoid tax, yeah, because all these loopholes suddenly appear somewhere or another down the line because it hasn't been formulated properly. I'm a great fan. When I had a proper job working for corporates many, you know, 40-odd years ago, I had budget responsibility for a very big department. But one of the things I was really, really keen on was a thing called zero-based budgeting. Everybody else hated it because it was too complicated to go back and start again. But I think it's really important. And zero-based budgeting just says, you know, what most people do with a budget is they go, we spent £1 million last year, inflation's 7%, so let's add 7%. Now, let's add 10% for luck, yeah, and have a new budget, you know, of £1.1 million. Whereas I'd say, let's do zero-based budgeting. Let's start from scratch. What do I need the money for? Yeah, and how much is it going to cost me, and what am I going to do? But we don't seem to do that with anything. We don't seem to go back to first principles and look at things all over again. So I'm not really asking a question. I'm just making a statement, really.
It's a good point, Paul, and it's something else that I wanted to come on to as well, yeah. Is, you know, that zero-based budgeting, people don't do it because it's hard.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a lot easier to say, oh, add 5 or 10%.
Yeah.
But it's a case of, well, let's examine what we actually need the money for. What did we spend it on last time?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of that on a business and a personal level comes back to the fact that an awful lot of people have got a really bad relationship with money.
Yeah.
And there's, again, with social media now, it's even worse. There's this gotta have mentality. We need to have stuff.
Absolutely. I want to kind of explore this with you as well. Because one of the beauties of a product like Xero is that you have got access to management accounts on a monthly basis. And I'm a great one. Lisa just sent me my management accounts, which I'm like, oh, dear, oh, dear, I need to look at that. But, you know, that's just 1 month. Mm. And as it happens, we're in the first month of our financial year. So it's a great time to kind of get that heads up that says you need to be aware of this, you need to look at this. Because seeing what you're spending, what you're earning and what you're doing on a monthly basis, I think is crucially important for any business. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yes, it's vital, really, because, you know, one of the things I'll often say to a business owner when I first meet them, start talking to them, what is it you want?
Yeah.
What is it you're doing here? What are you looking for? What are you working to? And if we go back to the very start, quite often a lot of people start a business because they get fed up working where they were. They think they can do it better themselves, or they've got a great idea.
Sure.
That's great. They get started. That fear of failure goes. And then all of a sudden it's right. What am I working to now? What do I want to build? What do I want to grow? And I like then for people then to start thinking about things. What is it you want? Do you want to be able to save up to buy?
Yeah.
Get your first step on the housing ladder.
Yeah.
Do you want to buy that motorhome that you want to use to travel around in the
Lamborghini
country? and then thinking further afield, want to earn enough so we can start a family, maybe send the children to a certain school, whatever it may be. And then I start talking to them about, and it's this book I've got in my hand, which is called The Retirement Cafe Handbook, which is by a financial advisor called Justin King. Now, I say retirement, don't start having a bit of a snooze now. Retirement doesn't mean when you turn the lights off, lock the door and say, that's it, work's finished, I'm in retirement now. Retirement is much more of a transitional thing. People go from, you know, being 100 miles an hour all the time to gradually reducing it down.
Yeah.
And for people who maybe haven't contemplated retirement, and I include a lot of business owners in this, probably from maybe the age of 45 onwards, think about what you're going to be doing in the future. One of those things could be paying into a pension, spending less time at work, succession planning, whatever it may be. But I'd very much encourage people to just have a read of that book. It's broken down into what Justin calls 9 accelerators towards that retirement, just to get people thinking about planning for the future.
Interestingly as well, I know you're not a financial advisor, you're an accountant, but there is an element here as well. again, talking about retirement and pensions and stuff like that, it's one of the things that we put off. You know, young people go, oh, that's miles into my future. But compound interest is a wonderful thing. Yeah. And putting money into a pension early on, even a very small amount of money, by the time you do retire in 40 or 50 years' time, even that small amount of money would have grown, and it's tax-free whilst it's growing.
That's
okay,
right.
You end up paying tax when you take it out, but whilst it's growing, it's tax-free. And with something like a SIP, a self-invested pension, you can use that to do certain things. Not everything. There's lots of things you can't do.
Yeah.
But there are certain things you can do using that pension fund. So, for instance, one of the things you could do is if you run a business that's based in an office, you could use the pension fund to buy an office. Yeah, and the rent that you pay yourself goes tax-free into your pension fund. So it has an asset and an income. And you don't have to wait until you're in your 50s or 60s to have a benefit from a pension, is the point I'm making, really.
That's right. I mean, a pension, you know, I go back to when I started work and people, probably my parents, saying, oh, you should start a pension. Mm. And I'd be like, oh, boring.
Yeah.
Why do I want to do that?
Yeah.
But again, it comes back to that relationship with money.
Yeah.
And now I think, oh, I wish I had listened a bit more. But again, it's that information I'm just trying to pass over to others. Start planning and thinking a bit about the future.
Yeah.
Just going back to compounding for a moment, compounding interest. Einstein called it the eighth wonder of the world.
Yeah.
And just as a very simple level, I'd like to mention, and I might have spoken about this last time I was on, there's this rule of 72, which basically means divide 72 by the rate of return you could achieve on something, and that will tell you how long it takes for your money to double.
Right.
So, for example, if you had £10,000 in a bank account and it was earning 7% interest per year, very approximate terms, that will double in value in 10 years' time. Double in value, you do absolutely nothing with it.
Yeah.
Now think what would happen if you're paying into that monthly as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. One of the other things, though, coming back away from pensions and savings, but again, developing a much better relationship with money management, it's the concept of knowing what you're doing in a business. You know, as you know, I'm launching two or three new things at the moment. And one of the interesting things there is how easy it is to spend money without kind of thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, so we're talking about buying equipment, buying some very expensive equipment. So somebody said to me, you can buy one of these for £3,000, or you can buy one that cooks food twice as quick for £9,000. So why don't we get that? I go, why do we need to cook it twice as quick when it's not going to make us twice the amount of money? Yeah. Now, there's a trade-off there, you know, customer service and all the rest of it. But thinking about what you're spending your money on and what the return is, in my opinion, not enough people have this. I'm trying to not call it a budget, because people set a budget without really thinking about it. It's actually basic analysis of what you spend, what you've got, what you're spending, what your return on that investment is, and when that return on investment happens. Yeah.
Yeah, I think at a very simple level, it's a case of using the financial information in your business to help you make a better business decision.
Mm.
Now, if you'd had £9,000 spare just sitting in a bank account, the decision for you then, Paul, with that bit of equipment will be, well, that money's doing nothing. We don't need it.
Yeah.
Let's buy the equipment with it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you just seen the equipment all nice and shiny and thought, I'm going to buy that.
Yeah.
And then I said, Paul, you need £9,000 for your VAT bill. Where is it?
Yeah.
Well, I spent it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Mark, what do you think is going to happen if and when Labour get into our tax?
Yeah, we don't want to go all political, but
no,
I think
just a bit.
I think what would happen would be that taxes in certain areas will go up. Mm. Allowances will be that were removed previously will be put back in place. But again, it's very timely, Jules, because we've got the Chancellor's autumn statement a week tomorrow.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to listen out and see what's going to happen there. Of course, nothing's announced. A few bits and pieces get leaked.
Yeah.
But I do know what Jeremy Hunt has mentioned is going to happen, is that a living wage is going to go up. So for the lower paid people, that's great news.
And what is it? Remind me now, it's 11, isn't it?
Living wage at the moment for those over 23 is £10.42.
Oh, I thought it was 11, okay.
Mm-hmm. So...
£10.42.
Yeah, so, it's just be interesting to see what happens in those areas. Other areas that they'll be looking at being changes, giving more allowance for people who like to save in ISAs, giving more flexibility in those areas. There's also potentially talk about stamp duty threshold being raised, which would be more attractive for buyers. Mm. But again, it's a case of wait and see. I think what the government will be looking to do is to try and reduce taxation to try and stimulate trade. Mm. So, for example, stamp duty in the property sector, is that going to mean that more people are going to be buying and selling houses?
Yeah. It's interesting as well, isn't it? I don't care about individual political parties because they're all as bad as each other, in my opinion. The thing is, you get loads of politicians with sound bites about things. I'll give you an example. It's actually one of the fringe parties. It wasn't one of the major parties. But a fringe party started waffling 2 days ago that what they said was, we're going to impose a 3% tax on online companies. And why are you going to do that? To make it fair for the high street. How does that work, then? Yeah, what are you trying to achieve by doing this? Well, it's not fair that online companies don't pay business rates. Of course they do. They pay a damn sight more than a small business in a high street as well, because they've got a whacking great warehouse full of stuff. So they pay huge business rates. Yeah, but it's not fair. What's not fair? Yeah. And anyway, the biggest thing that they missed is when they talk about an online business, they immediately think of Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What they don't think about is 122,000 Etsy businesses that are also online businesses that are operated by very small companies or as a side hustle. And of course, this is where politicians screw up things all the time, because they look at soundbite policies, not at the reality of a policy and what it will actually do. And what I said to this politician person is, what do you mean by the high street? Yeah, that's just a street. It's just the centre of a town, yeah? What you mean is the businesses that are in it. And at the moment, there's lots of businesses in a high street. There's coffee shops, there's tattoo parlours, there's nail bars. None of those are done online, yeah? There's a hairdresser. You try getting your hair cut online. It doesn't work, does it? Yeah. And they went, oh, yeah, but they're not selling products. So what? So what? What are you trying? They're not really trying to achieve anything. It's just soundbite politics. And a lot of the tax waffle that's going on from all sides of the political spectrum is just waffle. They haven't got a plan of what they're trying to achieve with any of this. That's what really annoys me about it, is they don't, you know... A lot of them use it to justify their spending plans that says, we're going to put a tax up on this, which will give us enough money, you know, to give everybody a free lollipop. But of course, they haven't even done the arithmetic to work out if that's actually true or not.
No, that's right. And it's a bit like the online equivalent of clickbait, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a headline just to get attention. But what I'm always interested in that area is, you know, you go down a high street... Hmm. You'd look at some shops and think, how can they survive
on empty, a high street trade? Yeah.
But then the other side of that is an awful lot of them have gone online as well.
Exactly.
So they're on the high street because that's where they were when they started. Now they've evolved.
Yeah.
Well, Canterbury Council apparently are putting up the parking charges yet again, which will be the dearth of the high street. You know, I think it was Whitstable was going to be £2.50 an hour. Mm. And where I live in Tankerton, if I go to my hairdresser, I've only got an hour to go on the high street, and my hair takes longer than an hour.
And here's something. I don't know if this is true, because I haven't researched it, but in that very argument, the council was saying, we're putting up car parking charges again because the council's broke and we need money. Somebody came along and went, so what's putting up what? Putting up car parking charges doesn't help. Why? They went, Do you do know you're not allowed to use car park charging money for anything other than transport infrastructure? And everybody went, what? And I went, yep. If you read the rules, you can't use the money unless you're investing it in the roads or buses. And, of course, you just shut down the bus service.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but, again, it's another typical piece of...
Well, an interesting one on that, Paul. I take my daughter ice skating at Gillingham Ice Rink.
Right.
Around about 3 years ago, they introduced charging in the car park for the ice rink. All that means now is everybody parks on the street outside the rink and doesn't pay.
hasn't
provided the solution.
Yeah. Well, I think the charging at hospitals is absolutely barbaric, don't you? People that have to go to hospital and they've got to pay a car park charge.
But the point isn't the charges, it's as Mark says, it's the reason for doing it and the fact that it doesn't work, yet they still carry on doing it without thinking about what it is they're trying to do. Okay, we're kind of almost running out of time, and it's fascinating talking to you, and I always have loving you here and chatting about these things, because all of us are trying to run businesses, and it gets more and more complicated as time goes past to try and run a business. From your point of view, Mark, are you seeing... people more and more sole traders, or are more and more people thinking about the protection of limited companies, or is it, you know, fairly much the same?
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, if we look at the sort of initial stages of somebody thinking, oh, I'm going to start a business, there is still that misconception of, oh, I need a limited company. Well, no, you don't necessarily. We'll always have a conversation with people about what it is they're going to do. Is it sensible for them to be a sole trader first, then a limited company, or should they go straight in? And I think in some cases the extra security you can get as an individual does make having a limited company worthwhile. But again, there's extra cost and legislation that comes with a limited company.
Sure.
So I think it's always on a case-by-case basis. So anybody who's out there thinking of starting business, anybody who's a sole trader wondering whether they need to be a limited company, I would say speak to an accountant. Just have a conversation. This is what I'm doing. What do you think I should do? Now, most good accountants will be happy to have a free consultation with you just to outline some of the things that you could look at.
Okay. I've got one last question for you. This is purely hypothetical, honestly. If someone has a company that owns 100% of another company, how easy is it to merge those into one structure?
Is that one individual owns two companies, or one individual owns one company and that company owns the other company? So it very much depends. So
in my hypothetical example, there are two shareholders in the main business, and the main business owns the other business 100%.
Right. Okay. So in those cases, I mean, essentially, what I'd look to do there is to just move the trade from the company that is owned to the owning company, because essentially what you've got there is a very simple group structure. You've got a parent company and a company below, which is called a subsidiary. Now, if you had an example where, for example, Paul, let's say you own two separate companies and you want to merge them, then we'd look at probably either transferring the trade from one to the other, or you'd set up a third company, which would be the group holding company, the parent company.
Right.
Different options, all of them are relatively straightforward, but there's different tax implications that comes with each. So again, that's another example where you should ask somebody before just going and doing it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Otherwise you might be paying for that. You know, act in haste, repent at leisure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mark, as always, it's fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and wisdom about business with us. Give us a shout out for the book you recommended this time, because the last time you recommended a book, which both Joe's and I read, and we loved it to bits.
Yeah.
So we're going to read this one as well. So give us a shout out for the book you recommended.
Again, I'll leave this copy with you. Now, I've got no affiliation with this book at all, but it's by a financial advisor called Justin King. One of the things I started doing during the lockdown was I started listening to his podcast. He brought a book out a few months ago, and it's called The Retirement Cafe. It's the sort of book that anybody can dip into just to get a few ideas about what they should maybe start to think about doing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I've got a mate that I just got in touch with, and she has had great jobs with Mark Warner, you know, abroad and stuff. And she's 62, and she's got no pension. So she said, I'm working like a dog, you know. She's got her own property, a small cottage, but nothing else.
Well, Jules, on that, definitely she should read this book. Because there's one chapter in it called It's Never Too Late.
Wow, that is good. Yeah, because she could live to be 110.
Or not.
Yeah. She might.
Yeah, cool. Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks, Paul.
Mark Telford of Telford's Accountants. You can find, they're all over our website, so you can click any of the links on either today's show or, in fact, the homepage of the website to find Mark's website. But just give us a shout out for it anyway.
Yeah, it's www.telfordsaccountants.com. Or if you want to get in touch with me, ask me a question, just search me on LinkedIn, Mark Telford.
Fantastic. Mark, thank you so much for that.
Thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. We're almost at the end of the show. There's only 2 minutes left. Have you got anything you need to read?
We had a tweet from DG East, number one. Hi, Paul, and your little helper. Please, can you give a shout out to a very frustrated vehicle supplier still waiting for vehicles to arrive? So that's very annoying, still waiting for his
cool. I want to tell you about this. It's my friends, Ella... and Cheryl, Ella Brocklebank and Cheryl Corsbrook.
They're having a do.
They run a thing called Donations with a Difference, which is a charity. And they're running the Kent Construction Charity Ball. It takes place on Friday the 24th of November. It's at the Ashford International Hotel. And because it's Ella and Cheryl, it runs from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. They're not party animals, are they? Yes, they are. It's the Kent Construction Charity Ball. There's a drinks reception, a three-course meal, raffle and auction, and DJ and dance floor. You can book your tickets or you can book a whole table. Just drop an email to trustees@dwad.org. That's trustees@dwad.org. That's Donations with a Difference. And the whole of that Kent Construction Charity Ball, the proceeds are going to the charity. Right.
Can you spare some time and help improve green spaces? Any budding gardeners with some free time on their hands are being encouraged to get involved with volunteering opportunities to help improve sites around Maidstone Town Centre. To get involved, go to grow@involvekent.org.uk. That's an email, not a website, I might add. Or call 03-000-810-005. Lots of zeros to get involved if you've got some free time to help improve green spaces.
Martin Reeves tweets, another great Business Bunker show, construction and tax, both very interesting interviews. Thank you for that, Martin. So brilliant. Thanks, Martin. Thanks for sharing that with us. Absolutely. Great stuff. We'll be back with another show next week. I want to say a huge thank you to our two guests, Mr. Tony Cheeseman of IQ Property Services, to Mr. Mark Telford of Telford's Accountants, to my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin. Thank you all who tweeted, emailed, and joined in the show. We'll be back with another Bunker next week.
Have a lovely week.
Have a great week, everybody, and see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.